Lonnie Smith featuring David Fathead Newman, and the tune is titled "He's a Mighty Good Leader." And of course, when you use phrasing like that, obviously you're talking about Donald Trump. He's a mighty good leader. So Lonnie Smith is on his Hammond B3 organ, David Fathead Newman on sax, Doug Monroe on guitar, and Frey Sy on drums. This is from Smith's 2003 album, From Boogaloo to Beck. Well, what are we going to talk about today, I wonder? Let's see. Well, the country is in a mess. Oh, yes, and the president is causing it. He's at the center of it. Okay, let's talk about that. If it gets any more ridiculous, I think people just start packing up, loading up their boats, their little water planes, and whatever it is they can put their stuff on to get the heck out of here. This is not a good feeling in the country at the moment. It really is not. So we'll talk about that today. We'll talk about where are you in the scheme of things? The way things are going, how you feel about that as an American citizen. Are you proud of your country at this time? Have you had it? Are you concerned about where things are going? These are some of the things that we want to know. Where are things going? How's it looking to you? People are getting more and more disappointed, and they feel that the country is not going, even if it gets better, it would not be soon. And there's a certain attitude that comes into play when people feel distressed about their country. Because it's not like they could jump in and fix it or help to fix it. The process is beyond them. They have no control. So how do you carry that psychological burden every day of seeing the country just fall to pieces, looking nothing like it used to? How does it feel when you have no power over what is happening? You have no power, really. I mean, people can go to the streets and they can raise their voices and raise alarms and so forth. But if nothing is done, if nothing happens that suggests that their voices are being listened to, that the country seems to have lost one of the very important characteristics that it used to have, and that was that you can be heard. Even if people don't agree, you can be heard. Now, tomorrow there's going to be this show and tell, this Q&A session again. And it's as if nobody gets it, that people, they're fed up. And they're fed up with everybody, Democrats, independents, you know, they're just fed up with the whole crowd. This business of politics being so important to the idea of democracy in this country. They don't believe it. And the parties know the people don't believe it, except the diehards. And more of them are beginning to become disillusioned. They're not supposed to suffer like this. They're not supposed, this carnival that is going on is not supposed to happen, not in this country. Their paychecks are getting smaller. They're getting more and more scared about what they see ahead. Schools are getting very difficult to believe in right now in terms of delivering a quality education to children. And many structural things are out of place and badly out of place. There are no quick fixes for anything. So in a way, the people feel very victimized now. And they can't ignore that there's a greater distance between where they are and where the government is. And it looks like they intend to keep it that way. We, the majority of people, we don't have answers either. The people we thought were listening to us are not. They are fighting for political survival. And in order to fight for political survival, they have to turn away from their base until they need them. That's the rationale they have given themselves. You know I support you, you know I'm with you, but I have to put my priorities together if I'm even elected. I can't swear that I will be. Big money's involved, you're swamped with influence by people who already have more than they need and more than they should get. We have nobody, really. You have one or two people who are still hanging in there being idealistic. But when you start to talk to them, when you start to talk to people of influence about politics, you see the effort, you actually see it on their faces. They're making an effort to lie to you and have you believe that what they're telling you is the truth. They know we stopped believing. They know that we look at them as if they belong to that other group who doesn't care whether we believe them or not. Just act like it. And we're all caught up in this orgy of deception and lies. The level and the conduct of even our highest public officials, it's alarming. The President of the United States and his personal conduct, the way he chooses to talk to and about people, it's just alarming. And they don't mind that you know they're crooked. In fact, some are pretty proud of it. And they could try and convince you that they're just being pragmatic. This is what I have to do to get through the barriers that we face. Suddenly it's a we thing. So by default, we get to join them in this we thing. And we begin to hallucinate as well. We begin to think that, well, look, if this is what has to happen, let it happen. Because we need help fast. We need quick fixes right now. It's one thing to look at it from afar, and you see the arguments people are making. I have to work two or three jobs just to make ends meet. Somebody's at fault, but whatever the case is, I am accountable to my family. I've got to put a roof over their heads. I've got to feed my children. I've got to pay their college tuition. I have real responsibilities, and I can't shirk my responsibilities. So if it means that I have two jobs full-time and one part-time, that's what it's going to be. When will it end? As soon as people get fed up enough to start identifying the source of their grief, of their anger, of their rage. And they begin to look at what was important not too long ago. A home, a stable community, public resources that were in fact responding to public need. It kept people calm. They knew that we were in trouble as a nation. But there was something there that said, we're trying our best to fix things. Just hang in there for a little bit longer. But all that is out the window. These people are for themselves and voracious about it. Anything they can get, anything they can take, anything they can steal, anything they can misappropriate. They are marauders. They're hooligans now. And they have no heart. The only thing that matters is that they succeed at what it is they intended to do. So I thought we should talk about that. Because even while we note these changes, which are very, very sad and very concerning, compounding it all is the notion of who deserves and who does not deserve to survive. We have this deeply ingrained racial war that has been going on that is also part, a big part of the mix. Who will survive this? Who will come out of this period okay? How? Why? We've avoided the question because it is just too painful to deal with straight on. So we cover it up and we talk about politics instead. But it is not leaving. It is inextricably tied up with this thing we call politics, so we can't get away from it. In this election year, this presidential election year, we see the candidates themselves understanding the reality that we are all living in. And there is no escape from the inevitable. It's coming. It's coming. The country, in fact, is being restructured, redesigned. And even the little bit of hope that we had, that we're part of it, we're part of a new way of thinking, we're part of the forward march of this country. We know we're not. We know we are not. How long would this deception hold things together long enough for us to believe that the problem really is global? It's about the global economy. It's about a country trying to cope with inherited problems. And all they need from us is a little cooperation and some patience. It will all work out. You think people believe that? Do people in Baltimore believe that? Do people in Washington, D.C., in the suburbs, right outside of the White House, do they believe that? Do the people in Detroit believe that? And in Flint, Michigan? Nobody believes this government anymore, including people who work for the government. They don't believe it. Because they have a different view of the structure of our society. They understand it from a different perspective, but they agree with most of us out here that whatever it is that they're trying to sell, we should not buy. We can't afford it. The price is way too high. I mean, how does a country blessed with so much in so many areas? God was very, very generous when he apportioned out things that could help us live. But we do not want to live peacefully. People found a way to fracture what the so-called founding fathers, they're not my founding fathers. I don't identify with them. And the structural things they put in place that would go on for generations to define in turn what we are supposed to be as, quote, Americans, unquote. I don't identify with that. I am victimized, as anybody else would, who does not agree, who has a different reference point about how this nation came to be and how it still is, how it works, and more often, how it doesn't work. We have to do something. We just can't let it go day after day with this false marker, this false notion that we are a modern nation and we're moving ahead, we're progressing. Nothing is further from the truth. So let's talk about that. You're part of a country, whether you believe so in a super patriotic way, or whether you just accept it as, well, you know, this is what it is. I'll just adjust. But when would this lead us as a nation? What kind of a future? In fact, this is part of the question. Do we have a future? There are people who naturally believe and they're planning for the future of their grandchildren and great-grandchildren because they accept that there is a future for them. That is not the case for most Americans. Most Americans are very pessimistic about the idea of being able to hand over, no matter what they do, to hand over to their progeny something worth protecting, something that actually is a gift to them that they don't have to do themselves. They're right back at square one. Every generation begins and ends at square one. Too many people in America are in that spot. Too many people. So, put on your thinking caps, as you usually do, and let's kind of help each other through this morass that we're in, that we can't easily get out of. What are we to do? They'll tell us, well, voting is what you have to do. But you vote and it doesn't change. Well, actually, that's not true. It changes, but not for the better. It's been a long time since millions and millions of people in the United States have been able to say to their children and grandchildren that things are changing and things are much better. They know that's not true. They know it's not true. Too many people in this country cannot say that. Things are much better. And when you ask them to justify that statement, well, slavery has ended. Is that the full argument that you're making there? That is what you are attaching your opinion to? Well, at least we're not slaves. There are people who say, well, in fact, we are. And many people who are, in fact, slaves have no idea that they are slaves. They don't want to know. They don't want to know the truth of it. They can't handle it. So give us, share your opinion about what exactly you feel that this nation is moving toward. What is the game plan here? Who is to benefit? Who is to suffer? How do we know that we have, quote, made it, unquote? How long does this process take? And these leaders that we have, and this system of leadership that we have, isn't it time to re-examine whether it has performed well for all Americans? Is there time that we re-examine this whole idea of the relationship between the governing bodies and those who are governed? Is it healthy? Is it democratic? Or do we need an overhaul? If so, what would it look like? How would it work? And the jumping off point for you could be where we are right now in pre-election season. And so many nasty things are coming up out of the earth and confronting us right face to face. We don't want that. And we make up excuses for the inexcusable. This is not the way it ought to be. 888-874-4888. Let's talk this out. Let's hear what you're thinking. What's on your mind at this moment in time and experience in the United States? Moki from Connecticut, you start us off today.
Greetings
Thank you.
and salutations. Hope you're feeling well today.
Actually, I'm hanging in.
Well, if you're feeling so-so, it beats bad by miles. So it's all a relative thing. And I hope you're feeling better.
Well, I hope so too. And you just have to. You have to get some new thoughts to hang on to. You have to look at things differently. And well, I think that's a great part of feeling differently about the state that we're in. So what is your offering today?
Well, what I can do personally is pray harder. That's what I've been doing a lot of recently. So let's talk about the powers that be. Do they want us to be happy and healthy? No, I think we can all agree. We have to identify the problem. So the question is who? Who's running the, this is a global problem. Who's running the world and what is their nature? So no one's talking about how much money the Rockefellers have. And nobody's looking at the family that both Hitler and Stalin left alone during the conflagration called World War II. I'm talking about the Rothschilds, as they like to pronounce it. I like to pronounce it as two German words, Red Shield, Rothschild. They're quadrillionaires. That's 1,000 times a trillion. Okay, so they're promoting war and have been for centuries. What do we do about it? A friend of mine from Sandy Hook recently said, well, we should just surround the White House, millions and millions of us. just lock down the whole town. And I say that that won't work. I mean, it's a nice expression of our will, but that won't work unless we employ some other tools. And I'm talking about national strike, and I'm talking about tax revolt. So we can start the conversation there. So who is running the whole planet? Who killed 6 million of their own just to establish a power center in the Mideast? You know, all the rich people we've heard of, they're chump change. I've said that before. You just put them in a little bowl or a bucket, and they're nothing compared to the amount of wealth that the Rothschilds, who control all the banks. If you control the money, you control the people, the politics, everything. So, you know, we have to see who's rocking the boat. Who doesn't want us to be happy?
Who's okay, really ready? Let me ask you then, what part or what role do people have here?
We're involved in a role of in a war of souls. It's really a spiritual war because ideas move everything. The propaganda machine is really quite active all over the world. Keep us deluded. Keep us apart. Keep us fighting one another. And enslave us, as you said. Gerald Celente likes to say we live in Slavelandia. So they don't have our interests at heart. Okay. Who are they, and what do we do about it? That's really where the conversation should start. And even the yellow vests, compromised. You know, they're on board with 5G because all of these vested interests with really evil agendas. I mean, what I'm trying to say is the people running the world are not acting godly. They're acting like haters of God, if you just want to use that as a symbol of what I think is going on.
So you see no hope.
Of course I see hope. We have to get off our butts. But we don't have to really go out, get out the door and get in our cars or start walking or running. We have to use the tools that I would say that peaceful, loving, non-cooperating people can employ. I didn't mention divesting yourself of stock in companies. I don't own any stock, but the people who do, they're making probably more money. What I would call blue chip stocks now are the war industry. Back to the Rothschilds. Sounds so innocent when you say it that way. The war industry. So Trump isn't running anything. He's taking orders from the military-industrial complex. Who is the military-industrial complex taking orders from? And I say it's the world banks and the one family that controls all the banks. So I know who the who is, and I thought about the what to do. It takes a type of activism that doesn't require violence, Patrice. It requires determination, and it doesn't require all of us. Ralph Nader and other people have said it just takes a very small 1%, some people say, of a very motivated, a very angry and motivated. When I say angry, I don't mean prone to violence. I mean people who need to channel their frustrations and anger. But we're all busy, except for those of us that are retired. I can't live on my retirement. I got to go back to work. So we're all busy chasing our tails. It's great. Keep us all distracted. You know, weapons of mass distraction, all the tools to divide and conquer, problem, reaction, solution. I think that's the dynamic that some people talk about. You take advantage of problems that come along naturally, and then when they don't, you create them. I think there's some very evil forces with a lot of power behind the weather, just what events are happening in the world. You think 250,000 people being wiped out by a tsunami with no warning system, you know, throughout Indonesia and the surrounding areas. You think that was an accident? You think Pakistan being under one-third or two-thirds of water being an accident. So there's some very diabolical things occurring. I have to remind the listening community that Franklin Roosevelt said, nothing happens in politics that is not meant to. So we're all being manipulated. We've got to wake up to that fact and grab the bull by the horns. There's stuff we don't have to buy. There's a lot of ways we can demonstrate our dissatisfaction. But, the multi-million person march on D.C. says nothing. It just wastes a lot of energy unless it's coupled with some really dynamic actions. So that's why I'm talking about a national strike and a tax revolt. Gotta start thinking in those terms, Eutrice, because what to do, you can talk forever about what to do, but you can't execute your plan unless you know your enemy and you know the nature of your enemy. And I said they're God-hating people. And if you don't believe in God, then just use that as a metaphor. Know who your enemy is and what their nature is. The depth of evil in our society and in the world is far, far deeper and greater than the average working person realizes.
You've laid out your vision and you've laid out your premises. But this is where we are. We just offload. Who do you think and how do you think we might arrive at a cogent response? David from Brooklyn, perhaps you could tell us that.
I'm sorry, am I still on, Eutrice?
Oh, no, I'm not hearing. I was supposed to be hearing David.
Yes, yes, I'm here. You hear me now?
Yes, I do.
All right. Yes, I mean, you spoke a little early about some people thinking that slavery has ended. Slavery has never ended. In 1865, it did not end. It just took other forms. So as we move along, those who rule drop chattel slavery, which did end in 1865, to other forms. And at this stage, many of us are into wage slavery. You also talked about or asked about the game plan. I think it's important for everyone to understand what the game plan is. The game plan is clear. Those who rule have decided that they're going to extract everything they can from the wealth of the labor and of the people and the environment than they can extract, and they do not care about the condition of the people. That's the reality that we're dealing with. And that's becoming clearer and clearer by the fact that those at the top, those, let's say, 10%, are getting richer and richer, and the rest of us at the middle and bottom are getting poorer and poorer. For example, even in the corporate media, recently there was an article where they have demonstrated that the top percent are paying less and less of the tax rate, and the rest of us at the bottom and the middle are paying more and more of the taxes. So the game plan is to enrich the few at the expense of the many and just confuse us every way they can, and not only with divide and conquer, with a big circus called the elections and so-called debates and whatnot that really have nothing to do with the goal of enriching the people at the top. The point that we need to understand, all of us who live here, is that there's no desire to make it a poverty-free place for most people to do what is in the interest of those people who live here. What is the goal of those people at the top is to rich, enrich themselves here and throughout the world and impoverish other people. It does not matter to them. There is one goal. Now, we're in this so-called election season, which is ridiculous, because the people, as I've said previously, I don't know if people heard me or not, where I said that the people have no party. There's, this is designed to have people think that in a Democrat situation where people are making choices. But if you have one party with two divisions, Republican and Democrat, according to the situation is right now, the Republicans are on the far right and the Democrat Party is Republican light. So they don't even have to worry about the people who don't like the Republicans. I guess that's the majority by a little bit, because those people have nowhere to go, because there's no other system of where there are viable parties at all. They have fringe parties all over the place, but the only viable parties are those two in the duopoly, the Republicans and the Democrats. So, you know, they don't even have to appeal to those people who don't like the situation, because you have nowhere to go if you're dealing with Republicans and Democrats. So people need to get that into their head. People need to understand what the game plan is. You asked about the game plan. Well, the game plan is clear. Enrich the few at the expense of the many, and keep doing it until the point comes where people need to rebel, and then when they think that they're going to rebel, that's when you throw out the bones and disarm those people at the point of rebellion. So that's my analysis of what's going on. And until people wake up and understand the system they're living in, and get angry enough, and after you get angry enough, then you take the next step, and that means some sort of rebellion to go against those people who are running this whole corrupt system that we live in of worldwide domination, imperialism, and crony capitalism that sucks the lifeblood out of people in this country and all over the world.
Why do you think, David, that people as a whole, Americans as a whole, have not yet reached this point of analysis, although they're feeling it every day? They know what it is because they're feeling it. They just are not interested in acting on what they feel.
Well, it's to me, it's real easy. It's easy because those who rule control the so-called education, which I say is not education, it's training. They control the media, and they are very successful in their signature maneuver, which is divide and conquer. So for the masses of people, regardless of their education experience, so-called, and that's in quotation marks, they are confused. and they don't recognize the enemy. You see, I talk to people all the time, and they talk about the enemy being poor people or black folks or, Asians or Arabs or Muslims and so forth. And they never get around to talking about, look, the enemy is the corporate sector and the ruling class that controls the sector. And so they never, never, ever deal with the real enemy. So the ruling class, being that they're so successful at propaganda and controlling all the levers of how people think, their brains have been captured by those who rule. So even though we have masses of people who are not only in poverty but losing their lives, going as cannon fodder to the ruling class's military and imperialist wars and whatnot, people just don't get it. They don't understand the system they're in. So we have to do a tremendous job in trying to educate people about how the system works so they will get enlightened to the point where they're able to deal with the system of capitalism, imperialism that we have going on to the top level as it is right now.
Thank you, David. Thanks for your input today. Thanks always for your input. You have a way of bringing us back to earth and having us focus on things that are universal truths. Thanks so much. Michael from New York, you're on the air. What is it that we're not getting, even though we know it, we feel it every day? What prevents us from acting
universal
on
truth? Thanks so much.
I'm sorry.
Michael from New York, you're on the air. What is it that we're not getting, even though we know it, we feel it every day, prevents us
on
truth? Thanks so much.
I'm sorry.
Michael from New York, you're on the air. What is...
Oh, we had some lag time there. Michael, are you on? Okay. Are you on? Oh, he's not with us. But you see, we've had two comprehensive analyses, and they're right on point. So what is the break between what they are observing and what they see as a way to move forward and what we experience every day, which is a kind of breakdown? People know it, they feel it, they just aren't interested in doing very much about it. You have any ideas about that? Because it comes down to that. A society looks to people to kick off a movement or to plant new ideas or to raise new questions, not because they'll make a lot of money out of it, but because they see it generally as a bona fide way of lifting a society out of an undesirable place and bringing the possibility to the masses of people of a different way that benefits more people and it wouldn't cost more. It is just about reallocating resources. But if the idea is that in the society we're in, the more you have, the better it is for you, even at the expense of others. Hi, Gwen, you're on the air.
Hi, Yatrif. I just wanted to comment on the first caller's analysis. I thought it was, I agree 100% with him. And I've heard this analysis before, and I carry almost all of I feel exactly the same way he does. So I was really happy to hear him put it out, but I think he put it out very, very well. So that was really great. But what I also wanted to add to the conversation was, because I think the question keeps coming up, is why? Why are we behaving like this? Why don't we act in our best interest? I don't really know why, but I think that one of the fruits that capitalism bears is this hope that you're going to get your big slab of the pie. But that is not how it works, and it's not ever going to be how it works. And so it's very hard to get people to collectively get together and do things that are for the embetterment of themselves so that they can live a happier, healthy life. Because there seems a great unwillingness to hold the people responsible for the way we are living our lives. We don't hold them responsible. We think that, well, you know, I don't feel like this, but there's always this feeling I get when I talk to people that they think, well, someday that might be me, and maybe I wouldn't want to be put in the situation of being held responsible for, you know, the things that I have. But I don't know what time we'll get to that reality. And as I shared with you the other day, my own experience, boots on the ground, and is that the market of jobs, the job market, gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and it's no joke. I mean, walk down the streets of Manhattan, and when you see all these retailers out of business on Madison Avenue, where they certainly should be able to pay their rent, that's something that's going to come right back to us, the working class. Then most of the working class has already been diminished because we got rid of so many jobs already in the manufacturing section. And so I personally feel like, the heat's coming down or that the water's getting hotter and hotter, and there's this panic. And I mean, I feel panic, but I also look around and I see that there's this apathy. Like, I can't understand how people I work with are not upset when they see the layoffs and these huge stores closing down. Because what are you going to do? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Unemployment will only last you 6 months. And I feel that there's such a big storm brewing. Not only do you have global warming, which is, you know, brewing, but you also have potentially in the near future a huge global collapse of all markets. As a matter of fact, I was listening to an economist the other night that spoke about that the world's already in a recession. We're already in this recession. And I just feel like really frightened. So I guess what I want to just go back to is that until we, one at a time, because it seems like I don't know how to teach people collectively that, you know, whatever you thought was going to happen to make you rich and famous and all that other stuff, it's not going to happen. The best you can do right now is lock arms and take back what is yours and take away what the I won't call them the ruling class, because they are thieves. They are thieves and they are pedophiles and they are very mentally ill, because any person that has to have that much, there is something wrong with. And why are we bowing down to these people? And why are we allowing them to steal directly from us in our life? There is enough for everybody, but not at this rate. Not when you hear that, you know, people like the ruling class have trillions and trillions of dollars. It just isn't working. But I think what I wanted to say was that until the millions and billions of people that live on this planet start to realize that, you know, these guys that push us around and steal from us, they're just human beings too. They have blood in their veins and they are made of bones and flesh. And they break just like we do. And so we need to stop treating them like they are gods, because they are not gods. And we need to stop also worshiping these graven images. You know, all these good Christians love to read the book, but they sure as hell don't like to follow the book. I mean, five churches, all over the city, churches are going down. I've told you this before. And there's always some ridiculous reason for why a church can't possibly operate unless it's, you know, it's got plenty of money in the coffers. You know, you can have a church anywhere. You can have a church in a basement, and it will still be a church, and it will still be you praying actually more authentically to God. But I do think that until the middle class, the bulk of this society, stops dreaming and wishing, that we're not going to be able to escape this. And it doesn't seem like there's that willingness there. It's almost like the people that want to vote for Hillary Clinton, and they call themselves progressive. But it really can't be both ways, because she really is not a progressive. And she's done a lot of bad things. And so if you can look the other way at all of those things and then say, you know, but I want to vote for her because she's a woman, that's ridiculous. You vote for the person who's the most qualified and hopefully the most honest.
Well, Gwen, you just closed out the program today, but it won't be the last time we hear from you on this. Hopefully you'll be back sharing your ideas. Thanks, everyone, for contributing today. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.